Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bond Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful Sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Torben, founder and CEO at Rose, the spreadsheet that thinks outside the cell. I loved it. I just knew I wanted to say that. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I would love to, to start with, the whole idea of Rose and what you're building. But while I was doing my research, I also found out that this is not your first gig. You had a previous company, which was Eat With.
Eat First.
And
no problem.
Also, you were a teacher at Harvard University. I was like, okay, this is going to be an interesting talk.
Well, yeah, at grad school, I was a teaching assistant. So I helped the professor run a class on leadership, which was very interesting, very, very cool experience. And then, I came to Berlin after grad school and started founding companies. And the first company was Eat First. Which was a completely vertically integrated food delivery service. So we were hiring chefs, designing meals, well, running kitchens, cooking, and then delivering them. And then we were also selling everything online. So that was a very interesting business. At the time in the US, there were companies like Munchery or Sprig or Spoon Rocket or Maple that were trying to do the same. And we had a lot of fun, started operating in London and Berlin, but the unit economics became very difficult over time. So it was hard to grow this and to really scale into a large company. So it remained a smaller catering operation in the end, but learned a lot about that type of business and also well, took away that I wanted to do something in a higher margin business. So running, I mean, at least in countries like Germany, the UK, the US, I think the delivery cost with humans delivering and you're constantly trying to expand your delivery area while you don't have density in these areas as you're onboarding them. That really eats into your cost. And then I think in these countries, you also have a taste that goes for very international cuisines. And you don't have, I think, repeated products that you can bring all of the time. So I think in our types of countries, these types of businesses didn't really go well. In Mediterranean countries and some Asian countries, they kind of succeeded, but also remained rather small. Yeah, because there, I think you have lower driver cost. You have more homogeneous food that you can cook. So it's a little bit easier, but still, not kind of the hyperscaling business.
That's super interesting. Was it acquired? I was trying to find like what happened to the company, and I found there is one that's called Eat First in Australia. Is it the same one?
Well, it's the same brand name. That is what's still there from the company that we founded. So at some point we used to be three co-founders. At some point we decided that it was going to be the best for the company that two of us leave. One who was London-based as still continued. Then, well, we went on to start what's now become Rose. And our third co-founder continued to run the company until it was sold. It then kind of became part of a larger catering group whose largest business is actually in Australia. And they liked our brand, so they slapped it onto everything.
Makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Because I was trying to put two and two together, and couldn't really find who went where. But okay, that's a really good reason to start a new business, bigger margins. So, but I had endless interviews here with founders who have hated Excel or you know wanted to make it better, or you know in some way wanted to modernize it, and that drove them to build whatever they were building. So what was it with you in Excel that drove
Rose? Yes. Yeah, I mean, well, obviously everyone uses Excel, or at least everyone uses spreadsheets, and there are thousands and thousands of SaaS businesses built on the promise of taking some process out of Excel and professionalizing it. And well, our approach was a bit different, right? We wanted to build a better Excel. And so because we saw this technology that everyone uses, 1 to 2 billion users in the world, which is huge, then, but it's 40 years old, over 40 years old, didn't really change much. The biggest innovation was Google Sheets with online collaboration. But that was in 2006, and the iPhone was invented in 2007. So the two major products that everyone used were both built before APIs became a thing, SaaS became a thing, the cell phone became a thing, or at least the smartphone became a thing, not even talking about AI, right? So we thought there must be a better way to build this type of product.
Okay. All right. So you kind of took the fundamental idea of Excel. So, you know, data is good, but let's make it look better.
Well, also, we took the fundamental idea of people, business people should be powerful and should have flexibility, right? So, which is great in productivity tools. And I think especially in the spreadsheet, it is a programming language of sorts that is just incomplete when you look at Excel. And that was also our initial idea. So we wanted to build like a Turing complete spreadsheet, which really takes all the concepts of programming into the spreadsheet UI and UX. And that's how we started out.
So I feel like, yeah, just knowing your recent developments and the features that you have just announced, that kind of goes into what you were just explaining with the Python for rows and all that. So what's the kind of, what's the, if any, the end goal or kind of the big vision for rows?
Well, I think the big vision is still to be the best spreadsheet, right? And obviously now, this is an AI spreadsheet that lets you analyze data and build reports, visualize data, and build spreadsheets in general, just kind of by prompting, right? That is now the vision of Rose and for Rose. And generally, what Rose is today, I mean, our types of use cases evolved over time. We are really looking to solve the data analysis and reporting problem that business people have, right? Whether you're in marketing or in finance or in product or you're an ops manager or so, and you want to understand something, why something happened, or you want to see what if we change this process tomorrow, then you usually end up downloading some CSVs and import them into Excel, and then you start crunching the data and so on, and then you get something that probably doesn't look very nice. And that's what we're solving. So what Rose is we have an easy data import. We have over 50 native integrations, our own API and so on. Then we have, you can even import images and PDFs now. So you can just drag them into the UI and we make a spreadsheet out of that. Then we have the AI analyst. So you just type prompts and ask questions about your data, ask what you want to build in the spreadsheet, and we do it for you. It's all dynamically linked to the source data, and then you can visualize it in a UI that is a bit more Notion-like, you know. So you have elements that you can drag around, like different tables and charts in one page, so you can have your own document or dashboard and then share it with your with your investors, with your team, or with your business partners.
The one thing that I noticed when I first learned about you guys, I went to Rose and I was like, okay, that's it? Like that's how it looks? That simple? Like it's so cool. And I, just yesterday I had another podcast and it's a founder who's also a designer. And one thing I asked him is, you know, how do you see the UI changing for SaaS products now that everyone is involving AI and everything is chat-based and everything, you know, everyone wants to talk to your tool? And in your case, I guess it's right there in the cell.
Yeah, that's right. But before I answer, what did your the podcaster, the designer, say yesterday?
He said it's a horrible idea.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He said he didn't like it and there should be a better way, but it's way too early to kind of understand what it is. But just the fact that everyone just like has a chat is definitely not it.
All right. Well, I'm not a designer by training, yeah. and what we've seen in the industry and also what we've seen working in Rose is, well, we moved everything to a side panel experience, right? So you can just prompt on a side panel that is always there. You have kind of while you're working in your spreadsheet, it also works on mobile. So we are, I think, the first spreadsheet that you can manipulate on your while you're on the go, right? So we have like a little toggle at the bottom where you can switch between the side panel or the prompt interface and the spreadsheet itself. And then, yeah, you mentioned you can also use the cell. I think this is where we're different from a side panel experience. You can just type equals and say, well, look up this data point from table 2 or so, and then it will create the VLOOKUP formula directly in the cell. Or even if there's a function already inside the cell, then you can say, well, no, this should actually be a sum or a sum ifs or so, and then it will change the function. You can just say whatever you want in the cell directly.
With that feature, you're actually kind of like, I saw it and I was like, you guys are creating a tool that I dreamt about, like, I don't know, 15, 17 years ago when I first saw Excel, because it was like, man, this is horrible. Like, I don't know any of those formulas. Can I just like type what I need and it pops up? And it was never possible. And now it is. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is. Absolutely. It still helps if you know something about the functions, of course, because it's still, as in any, like if you're using a coding assistant, it also helps if you can inspect if the output is what you really wanted, and then give feedback in a competent way. But yeah, the barrier has gotten down a lot.
Now we can, even I can use Excel, but I'm the ultimate hater. But I wanted to also ask you, because you already mentioned that you've got like a bunch of integrations. You're integrating even with bank accounts, which is super mm-hmm. cool. And I wanted to ask you how you decide what integration to build next, and you know if you can see a spike or any kind of movement in your customer acquisition once you introduce that new integration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, the integrations are a very important piece of what we're building. I think now the AI analyst has become more important in the last 2 years, but still, importing your data easily is important for business people, and also having the ability to automate this import, so you can, well, have your reports updated on a daily basis or on a weekly basis or for whatever you need without you having to do the analysis again or so. It's an important part. And being able to do this as you want without having to rely on a data scientist or on an engineer or so. It's something that is important for people. So therefore, yeah, it's important. We decide by just looking at what people want. I mean, the first thing that we built in Rose, and that was years ago, was just a GET function, which is a generic web request. And we looked at how our, at the time, alpha users were using this GET function and what APIs they were calling. And then we thought about abstracting from that. And those were the first integrations that we built. We built a strong suite for marketing, because that was a plurality of our users, right? We are, as I said, we have kind of user groups across all business functions, but marketing was the biggest. So we built out that suite in a good way, and then we added like data warehouses and database and CRMs, and and a couple of other things. Bank accounts is something that we added recently, and there we definitely saw a big change. I think it's the biggest. We have the highest number of customers on this bank account integration now among all of our integrations, right? So that was something where we saw a significant impact.
That's super interesting. Is that still a B2B part of the business, or is it B2C maybe?
Well, people generally use Rose for business purposes. I mean, I can't verify if people are building it for personal finance trackers, but we don't really see this in our conversations with our customers. It's more, your small business finance trackers, your cash tracking tool, your reconciliation tool, maybe your business plan that you want to power with actuals data and so on. That is what people are doing. But we have, generally it's business users, but from all sorts, like from the enterprise company to the freelancer. It's a spreadsheet, and everyone uses spreadsheets. So we see this in the distribution of our users.
Yeah, interesting. All right. You mentioned already quite a few different features that went out recently. And to be honest, like when I was scrolling down your LinkedIn posts, it was like 5 days ago you announced one of the new features, and then a week ago and 2 weeks ago and 3 weeks ago, and you're kind of just shipping every week, more or less. And I was wondering how you guys are doing this and how you're enabling your development team to do that. And if, you know, in this regard, the development team is the biggest team in Rose.
Yeah, it's by far the biggest team. So
everything goes from there.
Yeah. It's for us, it's all about the product. We don't really spend on marketing and sales, at least not at the moment. And the distribution is organic. Yeah, so it's engineers and some designers and some people who work with them, and I think that's our team. It's true that we're shipping a lot, and we're really proud of the speed that we're having. What's important for us is to give people ownership. I think like our engineers understand the problems that users have, and they have definitely freedom to solve these types of problems, also to explore kind of solutions on their own, like how they can make things better for the user technically. And then I think our culture is really about like building in internal POCs, doing demos early, and then kind of working with feedback and trying to ship things fast. That is what we're trying to do. Otherwise, I mean, we are we're not working in a very strict process. It's definitely agile with rather loose quarterly roadmap planning meetings, where we define kind of a set of challenges that every team wants to solve in the next quarter, and then the teams go at these challenges quite autonomously. And I have to say in the last two quarters we added a bit of flexibility in these roadmaps, more than we were used to, just because the pace of change is so fast and we see so much happening, so much that people kind of do with our product, so much that we learn also from kind of how models start behaving differently, how we can improve kind of the AI experience in Rose. So we've become more flexible over time, definitely.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about like if you use any processes, if it's, you know, shape up or whatever it is, but it seems like you're just doing what feels right.
Yeah, it is. I mean, definitely elements of shape up and agile and scrum are part of it, but we don't follow any of these processes to the letter. So it's And also our teams kind of do it a little bit differently. Yeah. For us, what is key, we have these quarterly roadmap meetings, and then we work pretty hands-on with people, depending on what it is. But it's all about like shipping something fast, shipping a POC, doing a demo, showing a demo, getting feedback, and then iterating until it's really great, and then we ship it.
Were there any features that you had to kill as quickly as you shipped them?
Well, some things don't work out, and we kill them, but it's as if we never shipped them, right? We definitely killed some things that we've shipped some time ago. For example, I was talking about marketing and data warehouse integrations. Early on, we also had some integrations for lead gen, enriching companies' data and so on, and enriching email data, this type of thing. We deprioritize these types of use cases because first of all, from a privacy standpoint, you get into murky territory. I mean, we're Europe-based, and we care about privacy related problems, and so. Yeah, usually if you want to be really great at this, you have to cut corners in some way. It's what the market demands. And also it didn't turn out to be our stickiest users. Yeah. There were other companies that really focused on this and managed to become really large companies. I'm thinking of Klay, right? Everyone, if I open my LinkedIn, everyone talking about sales is talking about Klay in some way, either positively or negatively, but they definitely became a large company on top of this use case from a kind of spreadsheet type of product. But yeah, it wasn't our focus, and we still have some of these integrations in the product, but yeah, some of them we killed them for one reason or the other.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
How often do you think it's necessary to go over, you know, everything that you've shipped to see, you know, if it's still relevant for your users and kill the features?
Well, I think our team does that regularly, and they, I mean, I think the tech debt discussion is a discussion in any engineering team. And well, obviously, there's always then a trade-off: how much time does it take to kill something and to clean everything up versus how much do we gain from that? But yeah, I think this is something that enters the conversation usually from the engineering side rather than, and then we actually look at the data, like how important is something for us, and can we move faster if we kill it? And yeah, and that way we kind of work through those types of problems. Yeah. There were also important things that we were working on, but that haven't seen the day of light yet. For example, in 2020, we decided to build a desktop app, like a native desktop app. And in 2022, after the market completely changed and inflation went up, we decided to completely kill that project. Very, very unfortunately, with a heavy heart. But yeah, that was also a decision that we took.
Any plans to bring it back to life?
Yes, not this year, but yes.
Would that be for like potentially bigger customers, enterprise?
No, I think like we're a productivity tool. Any Mac user, for example, has most productivity apps in the dock, right? Like if you're working with Notion or Slack or so, you probably have that in your dock, and we would see roles kind of along the same lines.
I feel like the more I talk to founders, the more I understand it's a very fine split between people who use Slack or Notion or whatever as an app and those people who use it in browser.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's a bit of a war. But yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm not going to go to war over this with anyone, but I see mostly people using it on the dock, these types of tools. I mean, web apps are fine, right? But if you're like a heavy user, a power user of a productivity tool, and there's an app available, I think most people tend to download the app and use it there.
Okay, no comments, but yeah, I'm going to also ask you about the team, because you started talking about the team and it feels like you've got this ownership, accountability given to your team, a lot of freedom and flexibility. Maybe tell me more about like who you're looking for. I mean, you're a fairly lean team. So what are the qualities that are appreciated at Rose, and how did you build the team? How did you decide that this is the size, this is the people that you're going to work with?
Yeah, well, I think the two qualities that we're really looking for in people are motivation and resilience. I think if you're sensing that someone is really motivated to join you, and there might be different motivations for people. Either it's the technical challenge, or it's the type of problem that you're solving, the purpose of the company, in some way also the quality of the team that's already there. I think if you're really sensing this a lot, it's a big plus for us when you join us, and also definitely for you, because we know that you'll be happy if we make you an offer. Then the other quality that we look for is resilience, because I think that in startups is biggest quality of all. Like whatever life throws at you, and startups change things many times, right? You can't rely on any reality that you see today to be there in a couple of months from now. So being able to live with this and to adapt and to still be motivated. And I think that is really the top quality that we look for in people.
That's amazing. I think I had a conversation once with somebody who joined a startup fairly recently, and they were like, how do you stay motivated? Like, this is exhausting. We change stuff. And I'm like, no, this is not about motivation. Like, you cannot expect yourself to be motivated by every decision or like every change that's in the company. And I think I agree, resilience is one of the things that you absolutely have to have, because you, like, if you have this idea and you believe in, like you said, the team, the challenge, or, you know, the idea of the of what you're building, that's what drives you, and it's never really just about motivation.
Yeah, and also if you have these types of qualities, then you know you're less motivated, for example, by kind of the perks that a company offers or so, and then for some reason you have to take a perk away or so, and then I mean, motivated and resilient people, they don't care so much, right? For them, it's about different things. It's about doing the work and doing it well, and then, succeeding at that.
Right. You cannot be always motivated to go for a run, like even if you love it. So, absolutely agree with you. I wanted to also ask you about growth, obviously. And, you know, you have this kind of like community-driven bit, as far as I understand. You can share templates and, you know, that there are integrations. So, it's a bit easier to collaborate on spreadsheets. And I was wondering how it works, and also if there are any other channels that were especially surprising for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, templates and our community spreadsheets, they contribute to our growth, but it's always a mix for us between acquisition and activation. Yeah, it's unclear. I mean, what is really the core quality of these types of pages? They help for sure, and they help in a way to acquire people because we are ranking for something. They for sure help to activate people because it's an easier starting point if you're looking for inspiration and so on. Most of our growth, or almost all of our growth, is like entirely organic. So it's like really direct traffic, word of mouth, spreadsheets being shared, like directly inviting people to the spreadsheet. It's organic content, someone creating something on, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, or so, YouTube about Rose. What was surprising is we have what we call a login-less system. So you go on rose.com and we throw you immediately in the product, right? You don't even need to sign up. That was that tripled our conversion rate to full signups, right? Which was really a positive effect for us. I think people like it. It is a challenge in terms of the onboarding, right? We have to, without a marketing page that we have in front of people immediately, we have to find a way to teach you what Rose is for and how you can use this, right? But I think people look at this very positively. Like if you give something before you take something, right? So you give you the product before you even need to enter your email address. I think people really like this type of thing. So we really have a fantastic conversion rate to signups for because of this. The other thing that was more recent is when we made our AI analyst available on mobile, that also had a big effect. Like it essentially, we shipped it together with the new version of our AI analyst, but it 5x the usage of the analyst to which mobile contributed a lot. Yeah. And I think people like it. They have never really been able to work with a spreadsheet on their cell phones. It's usually a terrible experience, and I think that is a cool feature that really surprised us in the effect that it had.
Yeah, the fact that you don't need to log in was super fun for me. I was like, okay, wait, but like, what do I do? But then I was like, wait a second, that's a spreadsheet. Like, what do you do? It just uses a spreadsheet, right? So that's easy. You don't really need anything. But about this AI analyst, because you told me already that this is one of the main features that is used by your users. And yeah, I was wondering, again, how you guys are building it, because in a way, you know, I feel like it's a bit confusing, maybe even for teams building the AI features, because, in a way, you don't know where kind of the threshold is and what customers want, and customers don't really know what they want yet. So how you're working in this kind of like new territory?
Well, it's a challenge definitely to work in this because it's new. It's new for everyone, right? So we are working on top of the APIs, right? Like ChatGPT APIs or GPT-4o, Sonnet, and so on. And this is how we're creating our product, also because we obviously believe that the models will become better and better as they are becoming, and they're becoming smarter and smarter, which also will make them solve kind of spreadsheet problems in more consistently over time. And then we've witnessed with interest the absolute breakout of the coding assistants, right? Not only Cursor for engineers, but also like tools like Replit or Lovable for more of a business user who is not as technical. And we think that this type of breakout is quite near for the AI spreadsheet experience as well, right? So that is what we're focused on. And then we're obviously looking at what the market is doing there and how they're solving problems with AI. And then we're looking at qualitative and quantitative data from our users. So we measure when we return errors. We're implementing like a mechanism to that is kind of self-healing when we deliver errors. And then we look at the user stories where we witness that some people get like an underwhelming response from our analyst that is not super impressive. And then if it's a problem that happens that we think is important, then we tell our engineers about it and ask them to make it better, right? And they usually find their ways.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I again, to that previous conversation with the founder who is also building an AI powered bit to his tool, and it's a customer support product. And yeah, he was like, it's fascinating how amazing AI is and what you can do with it and how helpful it is to your users, but just still making sure that it's with a person, it's still adjacent to a person, and you are able to overlook what's being done is super good, at least now, because it's not at the level yet where you're just like, okay, that's it, that's how you're using it, and you're on your own.
Yeah, I think you're right. When if you're in our customer support tool, we're using AI there as well, of course, right? As I think anyone does now. And there you always have kind of the normal experience to talk to team. But if you're in the AI analyst, you will never be able to talk to our team. And I think we won't integrate this into the experience because we're really focused on doing the best possible job through the AI, right? So what we're doing there is you type a prompt into the side panel. The LLM knows how our document looks like, and it knows what actions we can do with the spreadsheet. And then we let the LLM decide which type of action it wants to do and how, right? So add a column with a VLOOKUP in this table, or create this type of chart with these types of settings, or edit this Python script in this particular way, and so on. And then we execute all of this in our backend, right? But we are really completely focused on making the analyst experience itself better, and then delivering value to the user as consistently as possible, right? What I admire in the coding assistants now is how well they do that, right? You whatever you prompt, and it's very forgiving, right? Like there's a very easy fallback. So you type a prompt, and the odds that you are impressed by the result are almost 100%. Right? Only later, when you're already hooked to the tool, it gets difficult to work through the details if you don't have coding knowledge at least. Then it happens a lot that you kind of solve one problem but create a different one at the same time. But I think the consistency of delivering value to the user is impressive. And this is also what we're completely focused on. I think giving the ability to talk to a human about it, at least for our type of product, which is very bottoms up, doesn't really work.
That's fascinating. I once brought this issue up with one of the CTOs at SaaS Group, and he was like, you know what, Anna, I would much rather trust with my support to AI than, an intern that I hired yesterday and doesn't really know how to talk to people yet. So I was like, yeah, well, it really depends from which point of view you're coming at it. But yeah, it's definitely relevant. All right, just a couple more questions. Something that we usually finish with, what has been your biggest win and your biggest failure with Rose? And can be your personal or the company?
Well, I think biggest win for me, I'm super proud of what we're building and of the team that we've built and of the product as it is and of doing the work. I think this is really the biggest thing for me, and I really love working on this. And I think in terms of some of the mistakes that we've made, probably the biggest mistake that we've made is early on, we focused too much on back-end type of problems. I told you, we started with kind of this vision to build a Turing complete spreadsheet. So we dove into like APIs. We built this get function and the post function to work with APIs generally. We built functions to automate this, like to run cron jobs, right? To automate your data import and so on. But I think we neglected the UI. And what we've learned in this journey so far is that for productivity tools, the UI is extremely important, right? If you look at the productivity tools that saw kind of really, really strong growth in the last years, like, you know, Notion or Canva or Miro or Airtable, I mean, it's really tools that focused on an amazing UI and UX, and that is something that I think we were able to repair. So I really like our UI as it is now, but it's something that took us years of work to get right. I think if we had started out with this as a real priority, it would have been a way easier journey to get here. I think that was mistake number one and also the biggest one.
All right, but that's a cool learning. And yeah, I have to give it to you. Like I said, it's such a cool experience to go into Rose. So yeah, kudos to you guys. All right, so the last one is always about a hack, right? And it can be anything, it can be your personal, how you navigate this journey, how, you know, how you hire, how you develop, whatever. Or again, something that just works for the product and team.
Well, I think personally, as a founder, it's important to be prepared for a marathon, right? Again, speaking to resilience, this is really tough, and you have to be able to do it for a long time. So, I think finding ways to find some sanctuary or something where you can stay sane and have fun and not think about the business. And it's important for me, for example. I mean, I'm lucky to have three kids. So it comes kind of automatic, right? I spend time with my family, and that really takes me out of kind of work also mentally. And I can only recommend any founder to find something, whether you have kids or not, doesn't have to be kids. But yeah, you can do anything, right? Friends, sports, a nice hobby, or whatever it is. I think, well, in terms of business, I'm just thinking about a conversation that I've had, I think, twice in the last couple of weeks, which is a very small thing, but it's about notice periods. I think, at least in Europe, people tend to write too long notice periods in their employment contracts, and I don't understand why. Very few people are so critical inside a company that they really need a long notice period. It's really something that you as a founder can't replace, and that nobody else can replace, and that is absolutely critical to have. Then yes, but very few people fit this bill. So I think generally we give, for example, 4 weeks, and I kind of like this because the moment people don't want to work for you anymore, then they're demotivated. They're also demotivating others. And I'd rather have kind of a short notice period. Yeah. It's something that is very ingrained in our kind of, I think, business and legal culture and so on, something people are used to and maybe don't question, but yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I think because, well, if you decide to leave your job, it's not like you woke up and said, I'm leaving my job today. It's probably something was leading to it. And, you know, if you've been not so happy for a while, then why drag it on?
Both yeah, I think generally it's something that we in continental Europe can learn from the US and from the UK. It's kind of mobility in the labor market, right? I think people should work there where they're motivated and where they can deliver value. And yeah, I think we obviously have to work within the laws of our countries, but where we can have a little influence, like what notice period we write into the contract, we should use it.
All right, that's a cool hack. Thank you for sharing. And thanks for sharing this story. You know, like I said, love the product. Definitely not a power user, but, you know, I like to kind of play with it. Thank you for logging less use. But yeah, it's great to see what you're building and excited to, you know, to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Anna. This has been great, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders. And if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.